Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another session of Zero Point Radio. I'm on my own today as my co-host is not too well and will be listening off air and may call in at a later point. But Jim is recovering there in Toronto. I'm from Ottawa area, Ottawa, Canada. Just reviewing the other day, I've now carried this BBS radio show for almost 3 years, and again would like to thank BBS radio for the service they provide, a wide range of programming and some very interesting guests coming up on varied shows through the next week. So I do encourage people to look at the BBS radio website and explore a number of the programs that they offer. Okay, Zero Point, my website is at www.zeropoint.ca, and I invite the listeners to have a look at my website and have a good sample of my writing up there, put links to some of the interviews I've done on Coast to Coast and a series of videos on my lectures on the metaphysics of the secret doctrine from the IONS Institute in California from last summer. There are links to that material up on my website. Some pretty good music. I have my favorite songs up there. You know how we all have those favorite songs at different periods in our life. One of them is Mike and the Mechanics, Silent Runnings. Is a really very wonderful song. And an amazing version of Dylan's masterpiece song called, the song was Masters of War, and it's done by Pearl Jam. Absolutely amazing rendition of Dylan's classic song. And I think it's a song so relevant to the precarious times that we're living in. Now, generally, my interest is I'm a psychologist, a clinical and forensic psychologist. I was a university professor for 12 years. I worked in prisons for 12 years in Ontario in the correctional system. And for the last 4 to 5 years, I've dedicated myself to my writing and working on my website and seeking lecture opportunities. So I'm a clinical and forensic psychologist, meaning I'm knowledgeable and interested in legal and forensic issues, forensic science, court processes, legal processes, and so on. Now, my lifelong interest has been in the study of spiritual, mystical traditions and teachings and the relationship of these types of teachings to modern psychology and modern science. And what I do is provide a unique perspective on explaining ancient mystical teachings in terms of modern science. And particularly I focus on what I call the heart doctrine, which is the idea that a human being's real I within ourselves originates out of the dimensions of the heart, and that consciousness, human consciousness, has to do with the heart. It originates out of the heart rather than being produced by the brain and centered in the head. You see, for the past century, the whole of psychology and the educational system has neglected the psychology as a science of the soul. So we've dismissed that idea, and a materialistic philosophy arose within the educational system. And there, hence, has been a denial of spirit and soul. This is why there's like all these departments of psychology, but no one investigates the issues of paranormal psychology or the psychology of the soul. Anyway, the ancient meaning of the word psychology, psyche, meant soul in Greek, and logos means knowledge of something. So the ancient meaning of psychology was that it was the science of the soul. Now, the issue of the existence of the human soul has to do with this scientific question of what is the nature of human consciousness. And the whole of modern science has assumed that the brain in the head somehow produces consciousness. Whereas in all of the mystical traditions, the true self is said to exist within the heart. And this is the teaching that you find in yogic Vedic teachings, all about what they call the heart chakra, or the lotus of the heart, or what's called the cave of Brahman. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that jiva atma, the individual spiritual spark, is centered within the heart. In Christianity, the idea in the Gnostic tradition is that we all have divine sparks within us, and these are connected again to the heart. In Kabbalistic teachings, the manner in which the supernal forces are brought down into Tiferet, the central sephira, and that is associated with the heart. So in Kabbalistic teachings, the higher forces actualized and are made present within our heart. In Sufism, we find the same emphasis upon the heart. The poet Rumi goes searching for God, and he searches through the synagogues, and he doesn't find him there, and the highlands and the lowlands. He seeks everywhere for God, and then finally Rumi says, "I found him in his only place within mine own heart." So in all these different spiritual traditions, they've said that our true self is associated with the heart, and the experience of self-realization actually involves the awakening of the heart. So the ego is considered more to be a function of the mind centered in the head, whereas yourself is related to the heart. So in most people, we develop a false consciousness system based on the conditioning of the mind. So people know only egoic consciousness. Mystical realization, in a way, involves the breaking down or neutralization of those false egoic processes and the surrender to this experience of self within the heart. Ramana Maharshi defines self-realization as the dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. So this is an ancient teaching, and it's called the Heart Doctrine. In Madame Blavatsky's The Voice of the Silence, she says the mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. And then she says, compares the Heart Doctrine to what she calls the I Doctrine, which is the doctrine that the viewpoint that our higher self or our higher I is connected with the third eye. And we see this in the illustrations of the Illuminati, where they have the image of the eye within the pyramid, a triangle. And that symbolizes the third eye. Now, I wouldn't deny that we can awaken the third eye and attain the faculties of the third eye, but I would argue that firstly, we want to awaken within the heart first before we awaken higher centers. Sometimes people can awaken higher centers, but they've not become established within the heart, and then they experience varied forms of enlightenment, but not grounded or based in their basic self-awareness and being existence. So I argue that we want to awaken in the heart is the most essential task for us individually in our lives. Now, people are likely familiar with the yogic teaching that we all have seven chakras. Also, it's not only in yoga, it's also in mystical Christianity, and it's in Kabbalistic teachings and other sources, that we have seven primary energy centers or vortices within ourselves. And the heart is said to be the central one. And there are said to be three below the heart. And you might imagine depicting those three lower chakras as a triangle turned down. And then there are three chakras above the heart, which you might depict by a triangle turned upwards. So if you overlap the triangle turned down and the triangle turned upwards, you have a Star of David or a Seal of Solomon. Okay, if you put a seventh point in the center, I would say that represents the heart center. So in a way, the heart as the central chakra is between the three lower chakras in the world below and the three higher chakras in the world above. And the heart is caught in between those two realms. So in a way, a person's consciousness can become, from the heart, it can be conditioned or controlled by the three lower centers. And those are often associated with the motives of money, sex, and power. Money is associated with the root chakra. A person, if you're rooted in your root chakra, which is in your body, it's between your genitals and anus at the root of your body. It's called the root chakra. And it, if you're rooted in that chakra, you have a basic sense of being existence. In a way, you're grounded into the world materially. If someone is not rooted in that center, then there's that drive for money and possessions to try to give you a sense of being self-existence. So you try to compensate for what's lacking in yourself by being motivated to acquire money and wealth and possessions. Second center is, in yoga, it's called Svadhisthana, meaning her favorite resort, and it's associated with the sexual center. And the sexual center is, like, so important in understanding human psychology and human psychopathology. In a way, Gurdjieff explains that sex is like the principal motive in all social functions. He says, why do you think people go to the cafes, the movie theaters, all these social events? The primary motivation is sexual center. And we all know, if we're honest with ourselves, how much of that sexual motivation and awareness is a part of our lives. And then the third center is associated with the navel chakra, or the solar plexus, and it's associated with power, money, sex, and power. So it's associated with the solar plexus, so it's below the heart. The solar plexus is a nerve bundle of the autonomic nervous system. And it's a primary center where you experience anxiety, dread, fear, negative emotions, or if you're in a state of relaxation, you can feel warmth in your solar plexus. So again, some people are driven by the motive of wanting power over other people. Okay. For other people, for myself personally, I wouldn't really want power over other people. Like, in a way, it's like, for what purpose? In a way, I don't want to be a control freak as someone who has third chakra issues. They want to be in control of others. Okay, so if all of these chakras have their positive and negative aspect to them. They're all parts of what we are as beings, money, sex, and power. What we don't want in our psychology is to be dominated by these lower three motives of money, sex, and power and fail to get to the fourth chakra, which is the heart chakra. And the heart chakra, the awakening of the heart chakra, is associated primarily with the higher emotions. And I would say the heart chakra is associated with love, with compassion. We talk about having a heart. We talk about things being heartfelt. Oh, if we're excited, our heart skips a beat. I would say the heart is the center of our emotional nature, but particularly higher emotions. Gurdjieff, in his story on Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, explains that at one time, all beings had their emotional center within the heart, but then what happened was it was displaced in human beings, and it was distributed through the complex of nerves of the autonomic nervous system. So what happens is most people feel their primary emotional center more in the gut or abdomen, rather than within the heart. So we want to attain to the level of the heart. And if we awaken in the heart, the self within the heart is described as inherently self-illuminating. So if we awaken in the heart and we realize the light of the self, and that light then can illuminate us and illuminate our mind and illuminate higher centers. So in a way then, the heart is between two worlds. The spiritual worlds above and the material realms below, and the heart's in between there. And if you overlap those two triangles and put your central point in, you have a Star of David with a central point. And Madame Blavatsky, in Volume 3 of The Secret Doctrine, she describes that as being the seventh key, is this center point to the Star of David. Now, you might imagine, see, if you take, for instance, the star, the flag of Israel, and you have a Star of David, but there's no central point. It's empty inside. Okay, so you imagine, take the Star of David, but you put a central point, and that transforms that symbol. Without it, I guess the Star of Solomon is associated with the number of six. Six, six, six. But if you put a central point in it, then it changes the whole significance of the meaning of the Star of David. And in a way, with the seventh point, in Theosophy, Madame Blavatsky puts a little ankh within the Star of David. An ankh is like an Egyptian cross, and it represents the life principle within the living being. So I'm saying, in terms of geometry, or sacred geometry, a human being can be depicted by a Star of David with a central point. And in a way, we want to awaken within that, the heart center. If we look in the world around us, what we see is the masses of humankind have become so absorbed and driven by the motives of money, sex, and power. If you want to see what life, that level of life is all about, turn on the TV and watch all the news of the world, and which is all these madmen seeking money, sex, and power in the world, and the destructiveness of that psychology. Or you can see all the shows, all based on sexual titillation and humor and so on. It's like money, sex, and power. So we, in our human evolution, we can attain to seven levels of human existence. So most people become only a man number one, two, or three, dominated by the three lower centers. And they don't get to that fourth level. And that's the first level that we aim to attain, and that involves self-realization and the awakening to the self within the heart. Now, unfortunately, in Western society, through the media and the educational system, have become so corrupted and controlled through the last century that there's been a denial of spirit and soul. And instead, what's been formed is a completely false consciousness system in human beings. They have this completely false understanding of everything. In a general way, everything. For instance, we think we live in democratic countries because we go out and we have a vote, and we believe in, you know, American democracy, and, you know, America wants to spread democracy. You know, you go to spread democracy over in Iraq, you know, and you drop it out of airplanes, spreading democracy. Whoever's left might be able to vote someday. Okay, so we think we live in a democracy, but really the whole thing is a complete farce. Because really, whether you vote for Obama or Hillary Clinton or John McCain, they're all members of CFR, Council on Foreign Relations. They're all serving the corporate elite. They all have the same agenda of bringing down America as a sovereign country and instead replacing it and becoming part of a new world order. Okay, which is the reign of the psychopaths. So they're all part of that scheme. And really, there's no democracy at all. What is the choice between three members of the CFR? It's like you can vote for ding or you can vote for dong. But however you vote, you got a ding dong. See, there's no democracy in that. You got two criminal gangs and they each have someone who represents that criminal gang. And that's your choice. And then it's called democracy. If someone like Ron Paul tries to come into the debate, you see, he's completely excluded from all the media. They all misrepresent him. They don't report objectively any of the polling results. And then there's simply voter fraud. So unless someone is approved by the elitists, there's no chance of them arising to the position of running for office. See, all the presidents of the United States and the prime ministers of Canada, they all become Bilderberger, members of Bilderberg and the CFR, and they become members of these entities before they become prime minister. So that is partly how our political process became controlled by the banksters, meaning the bankster gangsters, and the corporate elite. And they've intentionally kind of deceived us into kind of saying, oh, we have a democracy and how lucky we are, and so blah, blah, blah. And the masses of people believe it, and we all, you know, you can watch it on TV, and you think there's this great big option, and here's democracy at work. But in a way, the whole thing is a complete fraud. So much is a fraud. It's a fraud how Americans think that, you know, they are kind of protecting the world, and they stand up for justice and spread justice and democracy in the world. Whereas history shows us the complete opposite. The United States has been a terrorist organization through history. They've usurped democracies and democratically elected people in other countries. They've carried out wars against other countries that haven't been able to surrender to the corporate elite. Really, the United States has spread terrorism around the world. You know, it's killed 2 million people in Vietnam. You know, they bombed, they murdered 1/3 of the population of Korea. You know, they've been in South America, Central America, around the world. And it's not only, and this isn't, see, around the world, they really have been a terrorist organization. And the CIA is a terrorist organization. That's one of the reasons Kennedy was assassinated by the CIA and probably the Mossad and CIA together, because he wanted to disband the CIA. So a lot of this history about our backgrounds is coming out in the world in this time of human history, which is very rare. You see, because these people themselves wrote the history books, and they edited the history books, and they took control of publishing, and they publish only what fits with their versions. So all the main magazines and the main corporate media are all controlled by these elitists who've completely deceived the American public as to what's really happening. So Americans think that they're, you know, we're kind of saving the world and we're heroes, and they make all these Hollywood movies, and they all show the radical, awful, radical terrorists in Arab nations, and then the Americans come and save everybody, and they come with honor and dignity and so on. But really, it's completely unlike that. Completely unlike that. If we had to compare nations to individuals, I would say that America has a criminal psychopathic disorder. But this isn't the American citizens. This isn't the patriots of America, the true Americans, those who believe in the Constitution and believe in what and everything good in America, which I always did. I always believed in what is wonderful about America as a nation, what has been and how talented and productive Americans had been. I always looked up to Americans. I only had my delusional system shattered about 2 years ago when I watched Loose Change. My 15-year-old son showed me the movie Loose Change. He said, Dad, what do you think of this? And I watched the movie and I couldn't believe it. I'd watched the towers come down that day, September 11th, one of those days we'll always remember. I still remember the day Kennedy was assassinated. And I bought the story without kind of thinking about it. I didn't know, even know there was a question, because I've never been very political. And then I watched that movie, Loose Change, and it so shocked me. And that, from there, I began to kind of study more and more and become part of what I would call is the truth movement that's now happening around the world. There is a truth movement where people are putting together collectively this knowledge and understanding of a new interpretation of history and the role of the banksters in subverting the Constitution of the United States, the independence of the people of the United States. The banksters took over. They took over the Federal Reserve. They took over printing your money. And it's a complete scheme of criminal racketeering. And these corporate elite and banksters then gained control and controlled the political parties. Okay, so this is an example I'm trying to get at, is this whole idea how we have a completely false consciousness system. And that's been inculcated or conditioned into us through the media primarily, and also through the educational system. And this has been intentionally done so that, in a way, the average American who believes in their government is really in a delusional state. If anyone really believes Osama bin Laden and his reindeers brought down those two towers in under 15 seconds at free fall speed as a perfect demolition, and you think Osama bin Laden and his reindeers did that, in a way you're suffering a delusion. This completely imaginary false idea that you've simply been told and you repeat it and you assume it and you trust your government. So to awaken, awakening to all this stuff in what that's happening in the world is really quite horrifying. One's likely to realize that America is slipping into fascism, into becoming a fascist state. As is Canada and England and other countries, that in a way these elites rule all the countries of the world. This isn't simply an American problem. It's not an Israeli problem. No, this problem is around the world. These elites have kind of deceived the human population as to the true nature of history and the true course of events. So human beings have this delusional system. And what's happening, in a way, is that people are waking up. And the internet has been the most valuable aspect to that. Radio programs as those offered here on BBS and other truth networks. And all this information is being come out and being made available. So people are wakening up. They're beginning to realize, we believe this huge, monstrous lie. And the nation of America has almost been lost. In a way, the sovereignty of the United States has almost been lost. You're going to be consumed in the North American Union, which the elite tried to push through. And they don't even tell you about their meetings, and they misrepresent what they're doing through their media. So most people don't even know it's happening. People live in ignorance of what's being done. You know, and the media just denies it, and people trust the media, and then they have terms that they use in their disinformation program. They say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, okay, which is a label. I mean, if you're a conspiracy theorist, that, like, you're a nutcase, or there's something wrong with that. Well, if anyone is not a conspiracy theorist, you know absolutely nothing about human history, and you really are a complete goofball, because history is full of conspiracies. There's always been conspiracies. What do you think history is all about? All these people who conspire together to acquire power and control over other human beings and subjugate other people. If you're not a conspiracy theory, you're completely out of touch with reality, because the world is dominated in the political realm by all these conspiratorial plots and plans. It's happening all around you. So anyone who's not a conspiracy theorist simply has no idea of what's happening within the world, within your society. Doesn't mean all the conspiracies are true, obviously not. You know, people think that conspiracy theory, so it's a theory. So then they think that that means there's no facts to support it. But that's a complete misunderstanding of what's meant by the word theory. Like in science, in physics, you have what's called quantum theory. And you have the general theory of relativity. These are the two scientific theories that are the basis of modern physics. And they can predict particle interactions to 0.0001% accuracy. Like these, they are astonishing theories with all kinds of implications and applications. But they're still theories. Okay, but the theories, there's theories, the theoretical side of it, and then there's the factual side, the evidences. Now, the fact of the matter is, all the evidences support conspiracy theories. There's no doubt. For anyone to believe that Osama bin Laden and his reindeer brought down the two towers, that the government has their own conspiracy theory about it. You see, the government thinks that. They think that these Muslim Arabs, or they don't think that, they know the truth. But they want you to believe that these crazy Arab Muslims who don't like American freedoms wanted to strike against your nation. Okay, and this is completely fanciful. They treat you like sheep or children. And this has been accepted. It's just swallowed whole by the American public. As it was by myself until 2 years ago. I could not conceive how devious our governments have become. Really, we do not live in a democracy. We live in a psychopathocracy. Countries run by psychopaths, criminal psychopaths. And this is really what's happened, and it's happened while the rest of us have been amused with money, sex, and power, and titillation, and all the events of our lives and relationships. And all the while, there have been these elites who have schemed these terrible things. And they're bringing more on. We're not through their story. Okay, now today I was going to talk... Well, I'll just continue a few more notes. I go back and forth on my radio show. Sometimes I try to elaborate mystical spiritual teachings of consciousness and creation, but then also now it's like the significance of what's happening politically and around the world is just so utterly profound that I feel that I can't simply continue on in the same way, that I want to try to contribute and help be part of this truth movement and awakening of human consciousness. I see the period now between 2008 and 2012, we're either going to end up in 2012 having had major cataclysmic wars and famine and starvation and exterminations of people around the world, or we might have a wholly alternative new world. I don't want to use the word new world order. It's funny because the word a new world order, in a way that could sound good. I mean, it sounds good in ways, but it's generally associated with the, you know, with the Bushes, and Adolf Hitler used the same word, and this, their idea of a new world order is a fascist state with complete control, the state having complete control over people, everybody microchipped, people confined into cities, and the elites having complete dominance on the earth. And then they're able to exterminate and commit genocide against masses of people because they have this view that the earth can only sustain 500 million people, and they think that that should be themselves and the other 6 billion people. So, what was I saying here? So, now, in a way, I think we could have a new world order of a different kind. Like, if we applied if our own laws were applied, and in Canada, and I'm sure in the States as well, we have laws which forbid the sponsoring and participation in terrorist activities. Well, if these laws were actually applied, we would realize that that would enable the peoples of the United States to seize the assets of all of these corporate elites and banker elites who have been involved in these schemes. There's overwhelming evidences for it. There's overwhelming evidences for their conspiratorial plots, all the different things they're doing. They're poisoning you with chemtrails. They're poisoning you with fluoride in your water. They're poisoning you with aspartame in your food. They're trying to bring about famine. Okay, they want to have this reduction in the world food supply. They may spread diseases through your vegetables, your meat. They have various schemes to try to bring about famine. Okay, they have all these different technologies now. They have an arsenal of weapons. Now their newest thing that they're playing with is their weather modification. And here, we just don't know now what's happening on the earth. It's hard to know when weather, dramatic weather events, whether they're simply caused by natural processes or whether they're really being created by the elites through the HAARP program. I mean, it's understood, I understand that it's not only the U.S. that has weather modification technologies, but also Russia and China. So there's these new technologies, and it's hard to say. You see, 1 month I see that there's this kind of uprising in Burma. I forget the new name for Burma. And as all the media, American media, portray it as, you know, this repressive military regime in Burma. And in a way, that's one of the few places on earth that's held out against American imperialism. Okay, and then the next thing you know, there's this huge cyclone, unknown in modern history, that devastates the country. And there's the United States wanting to come in and come in for humanitarian reasons, okay? And then the government of Burma doesn't want them in. Now, can anyone doubt why? You see, because they know, see, that whole thing, and the cyclone, was that really simply a natural phenomenon, or was that one of their uses of the HAARP to create these types of storms? And we just look at what's happening in the Midwest, the United States at this time. It's terrible. My prayers go out to the people in the Midwest who are facing all these terrible flooding all through Iowa, and Des Moines is at risk, and this other city where 400 blocks of downtown have been flooded. I mean, these are huge, awful, catastrophic events for people who have their lives in those communities. Okay, and already on the news they're saying, oh, this is going to cause food supply to come up because these floods are devastating the farmland and they're going to very significantly reduce food supply, which is one of the things the elites are trying to do, is to bring about famine, and that allows them to institute other controls over people. Oh, inoculations is another one of their weapons. And now they kind of even force people to get inoculations. And these inoculations, there's all kinds of cancerous agents in it, maybe causing autism, severe reactions in people. They have mercury in these inoculations, formaldehyde, and none of these are properly researched. They're a weapon. You see, now we're realizing that many of these things, like we thought AIDS came out of Africa, some monkeys copulating. And now it's come out that no, AIDS was developed in the United States by the CIA and within the biochemical industry. It was deliberately introduced. And we have all these other fears of biological weapons. But who owns the biological weapons? The elites own the biological weapons. You see, and they can do whatever they want and blame it on someone else. I mean, they blew up two towers in New York City, blamed it on the Muslims, and every 90% of Americans wanted to go over and invade Afghanistan and Iraq and thought you were right and acting in the service of justice and so on. Whereas really, you become an imperialist terrorist nation. You know, 1.2 million people have died in Iraq. 3 to 4 million are homeless and refugees. The country's been polluted with 300,000 times the amount of depleted uranium used on Japan. You know, this uranium has a half-life of over a billion years. It desecrated this land. And then the pollution from these weapons spreads around the world. The uranium from Iraq was measured in Texas and southern states. So it's not simply that confined. We're poisoning the planet. The elites, they don't care. In a way, they don't care for you. They don't care for your children. They don't care for your nation. They don't care for your God. All they care for is their own money, sex, and power. They have no heart. They have no feeling for other people. In a way, they are empty inside. They're like the Star of David with no central point. They're empty inside. Gurdjieff calls them terrestrial nullities. You see, these people lose their souls. They sell their souls. See, it's nice to believe everybody's got a soul and we'll all live happily ever after in heaven. But maybe this isn't so. Maybe we can lose our soul. Gurdjieff has a very interesting explanation. It's a story in a book by Fritz Peters on Gurdjieff Remembered. And Peters was a young boy who lived with Gurdjieff. And he used to be his houseboy. And one day Gurdjieff pointed out in the yard, this was in France when Gurdjieff had an institute there in the 1920s, and there was a big oak tree. Hello? There was a big oak tree there. And Gurdjieff asked the boy, Peters, he said, "What do you see on the ground around the oak tree?" And Peters said, "Well, acorns, nuts." And Gurdjieff says, "Well, how many acorns, how many nuts are there?" And the boy looked and apparently said, "I don't know, thousands, you know, tens of thousands even, lots of acorns." And then Gurdjieff asked the boy, "And how many of those acorns will become oak trees?" And the boy was kind of taken back, and he said, "Well, I don't know, maybe only a couple, maybe none." And Gurdjieff explained, "We have to learn from nature. There are many nuts, but how many of those will become oak trees?" And and Gurdjieff explained, "And what happens to the other nuts? They become fertilizer and become basis for possible future man. But they don't attain their individuality in this life. They don't attain their soul, acquire their soul." So in a way, that is like the masses of humankind can become soulless. They lose their soul. They don't attain their individuality. If you lose your soul upon death, you pass into the lower worlds. You can continue to exist, but you'll pass into a lower realm and more mechanical level of existence. Whereas if we attain to our soul, we can pass into the sun and attain to the sun. So in a way, a human being, your soul is between the sun above and the moon below. Gurdjieff explains when anything dies, a certain energy, soul energy, passes to the moon. So if you've not attained anything in your individual development, you can be banished to the moon as a soul and be fed on you can be fed on by the lunar spirits. Okay. So the idea then is a soul, we have to attain to our soul. Okay, now coming back to what I was saying. So in a way, these beings, these world elites, you see, they think they're so special, and they kind of have this big egos, big false consciousness system, and they sell out their souls for money, sex, and power. That's why you see such a rampant criminal, like, perversion and perverted sexual practices, sex slaves, all forms of bestiality, homosexuality, all these sexual perversions and pedophilia, and how much this is popular among your elected and representatives and the police and people within all these power positions. You know, there's a huge role played in this whole thing by sex. And pedophilia and homosexuality, these kinds of activities are one of the main ways that the elites gain control of people so that because they can blackmail them and control them once they're able to expose them if they don't fall into line. So we have a pretty serious problem in the world today. It's been the rise of the psychopaths. And humankind has been asleep, and now it's like that people are beginning to wake up. And this awakening that is happening not only in the United States, it's happening around the world. Some interesting news from the last 2 weeks. One was, I am a regular listener to Alex Jones' Prison Planet. And although many people don't like Alex Jones, and at times he gets a little bit of an egomaniac, but in other times he's a deeply feeling individual and has a remarkable kind of knowledge and has done so much as an American patriot to bring the truth out to the American public. A great threat to himself. But anyway, he had an absolutely amazing show yesterday. And one guest was Kucinich, the senator who's brought these impeachment articles before the Senate and took 4 hours to read these out before the Senate. And Kucinich was on Alex Jones. And this man, Kucinich, you just have to listen to this interview. He is absolutely amazing. That he represents everything that's fine in the American spirit. His humility, his sense of injustice, and unable to tolerate the criminality he perceives as happening within the government. I do strongly encourage people, go to www.prisonplanet.com and listen to Alex Jones's interview with Dennis Kucinich. And I urge people out there, Dennis Kucinich mentions this on the interview, is contact your congressman. Demand that they support this resolution. You know, you have this Nancy Pelosi who's kind of, again, become another traitor and complicit in war crimes. And she's taking impeachment off the table, but this simply can't be done. And in a way, what we're seeing, Kucinich is bringing this before the Senate. In a way, you can keep, it puts it on record. And we'll see who among your senators, who is standing up for right and who is simply become part of the criminal corporate elite and the war machine. And Kucinich was saying that if it's defeated the first time, he's going to bring it back and he's going to expand it and he's going to read it again. And he apparently is able to do this and to bring it back and put it in the face of Americans. And then it's so funny because I watch CNN, and this is happening in the Senate of the United States. Kucinich is reading these impeachment articles against the President of the United States, and you turn on CNN, well, I turn on that. I couldn't even watch Fox. It makes me sick. Sometimes these media, once you begin to see their lies, you just see through them, and you see what empty characters and liars, pathological liars they are. The whole thing is a complete fraud. So turn on CNN, well, most trusted name in news. What are they reporting on Kucinich before the Senate? And they don't even mention it, at least not that I saw. They certainly don't give it attention. They have all their other games to disinformation and to distract you and other things to avoid informing the public. You see, this is part of what's become the problem, is that the media is all complicit in supporting this criminal elite who own the media. I mean, 70% of the American media is owned by General Electric. And that's owned, I think, partly by Royal Family of England and partly by the Saudis. I mean, I'm not sure the complexity of it all. Rupert
Murdoch.
Another character in there in the States. Okay, but we have a completely corrupted media, all of whom should be subject to Nuremberg standards for their complicity in these crimes, if they're ever brought to justice. So anyway, I would encourage people, listen to this talk, an interview with Kucinich. That was one interview yesterday from Alex Jones, and a second was with Ralph Nader. And I hadn't really heard Ralph Nader speak, but my goodness, he was strong and eloquent and really clear on the Alex Jones show, just talking about the criminality of the whole government and how it sold out to the corporate elite, and having a really broad view of the whole pathology of what has happened in America. So it's astonishing. Ralph Nader, that was another very valuable interview to listen to. And another item, I'm just going through some items from the last 2 weeks that stand out to me, is I listened to Ron Paul, I guess, backing out of the running for presidency. And instead, he seems to be refocusing his effort in supporting a more grassroots movement throughout the United States. It's like the Americans, again, it's like real patriots are beginning to rise up and, like, say, enough is enough, and making effective action, running for office, whether it's your local office, city council, educational board, you've got to take back your political system. And it seems Ron Paul is trying to help and support a whole generation of new people who can rise through your democratic structures to take back your nation. So Ron Paul has been one of the main superstars to emerge on the world stage. His pointing out the whole system of the Federal Reserve and the corruption that's happened through that now Americans are beginning to realize this has been hidden from you for almost a century. People hadn't really realized what the Federal Reserve was and how it all worked. And if you went to your educational system, even study economics, you weren't really enlightened as to how it really worked, the whole system worked. No, you weren't. I took some economics and political science. I look back now, everything I taught was a complete deception of what I was taught. Just like history. We have a reinterpretation of history now. You see, we think Hitler was this egomaniac who just acted on his own to bring about the Second World War. Now it's coming out how the elites were behind both sides of the Second World War, both sides of the First World War. They scheme all these wars because they make money from it. You see, if they can make millions or billions of dollars through murdering people, they have no problem with that. You see most normal human beings, in a way, have a heart a bit. Like most human beings, you know, if you see a little puppy that's hurt, or a kitten, or a child, or an older person, you have a heart. You have sympathy, empathy for them. You feel their feelings. And good Americans are like that, as are good Canadians and people in other countries around the world. You have a heart. See? But these people, in a way, they are heartless. All they care about is their own money, sex, and power. And they don't care how many people they murder to attain this. How much of the planet they destroy. They don't care if they bounce their harp beams off the ionosphere and heat the ionosphere up to the temperature of the sun's corona, and they can melt the Canadian Arctic to bring their ships over from China to the north. They do all these devious things. They don't care for anybody but their own money, sex, and power. These people are terrestrial nullities who lose their souls. Their souls are taken by Satan, and some of them are really Satanists. They're into black magic, blood rituals, drinking blood, all kinds of things. This is going on. This is so widespread. People have no idea how widespread these things are. A satanic elite, criminal elite, who have no heart, have taken over America. And not only America, and I'm not being critical of Americans. I love Americans. I have some dear friends in America. Don, the owner here of BBS, he's a dear friend. A good man, like, you know, other people I know, Americans. I've never had any problem with Americans in my personal interactions. Americans are fine people. But what's happened to your country, as has happened in Canada? And this isn't a recent thing. Now we look at it, and it's been like this for 20, 30, 40 years, longer. These patterns have been repeated through history. It's just never before have people kind of grasped the larger picture. And now it's kind of coming together. There are so many good documentary movies available for free on the internet. If you go to my website, I give you links to Loose Change, First Edition, Final Cut, Endgame, Aaron Russo's From Freedom to Fascism, some of Horowitz's work on the drug cartels and the pharmaceuticals, inoculations, and that material. All this material is available. The best movies to watch these days are on the internet, and they're these real-life documentaries. They're astonishing movies. And you know, those filmmakers who bring forth those movies are putting their lives at risk and doing a huge public service. But this knowledge now is spreading around the world. You go to Google and look at most watched videos, Endgame's up there, Freedom to Fascism, all these movies are the most watched movies in the world. Loose Change, according to Alex Jones, has been downloaded 100 million times over the internet. See, people are waking up. And when I watch these movies, and then I try to watch a Hollywood movie, I used to rent movies at the video store and watch movies on the weekend. And now, whenever I see it, it's like the Hollywood movies, most of it is such garbage, absolute garbage. It just feeds something sick in people, trying to portray all these forms of psychopathology and sexual psychopathology and cruelty and violence, titillation, and it's all a deception. It's so shallow. In a way, Hollywood became a part of this method of creating the delusional system of America. You know, you watch some of these patriotic American movies, Hollywood movies, and the Americans are always the heroes. But they don't show you the truth that the Americans have been the terrorists. I mean, it's the PNAC document, the United States say they want world military domination. Well, doesn't that remind you of someone who lived in Germany about 60 years ago? The Germans and Nazis wanted world domination, military domination. Everybody fought the Germans. Now the Americans want it, but, well, we think it's okay for America to do that? They have 750 bases in 150 countries around the world. They want to police the world. And the whole time, they're not really bringing justice to countries. That's not what they're doing. They're serving the corporate elites. They're subverting democratic leaders in other countries. So Americans, in a way, it's like we have to wake up. The American dream became an American nightmare. And this nightmare, it's not only an American problem. Anywhere, I think I'm addressing more Americans in speaking. This problem's in Canada. You know, this problem's in England. It's not the American government who did 9/11. It wasn't the American government. It was elements in the shadow government which have infiltrated American government, CIA, FBI, all these agencies. Okay. So it's a complex. It's hard to identify who these people are. So it's not American government that did this. But I mean, for the most part, the American government is supporting it. You just see in the Senate, like, this truth of 9/11, all your senators know the truth of 9/11. You think that some of them don't really know? They all know. They know. Do you think the media don't know? Of course they know. It was interesting, yesterday they had one fellow, I think, from an FM radio show in the United States, and he was encouraging people to murder a 9/11 truther who had the idea of sending videos of 9/11 truth to soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan to help wake them up to how it's an unjust war and what's really behind the war. And this one of these neocon radio show hosts was calling for someone to assassinate this person for speaking the truth. We can see the elites are starting to get worried because people are waking up. I think several times they've postponed their next mass murder, which is the mass murder of the people of Iran. Okay? And you just think how crazy this is. You see, you turn on the media and you watch media and you think, oh yeah, for the protection of America, boy, and the protection of Israel, we gotta bomb Iran. Yeah, Iran might get a nuclear weapon. Okay, meanwhile, Israel's got hundreds of nuclear weapons. They've never agreed to abide by the nuclear non-proliferation agreement. They've never disclosed what they actually have. Israel is allowed to do whatever it wants, whatever it wants. But if Iran is going to have a nuclear weapon, it's time to bomb Iran. Oh, yeah, see, your mind has to be so distorted to justify preemptive action against Iran because Iran might get nuclear weapons. And then Israel saying Iran poses a threat to Israel. Okay, but excuse me, looking objectively, isn't it Israel posing the threat to Iran? Israel is openly threatening to bomb Iran. Iran, minister there, he has this comment where he says Zionism should be wiped away from the earth. And people always say interpret it as saying that the Israel should be, which isn't what he says, but he says Zionism. See, the people of Israel are as deceived about this whole scheme as are the people of America. You see, it's not the people of Israel that are bad. They're facing the same problems in their country as Americans are facing in theirs, and Canadians in Canada, and English in England.
Well, to be fair, Chris, the Prime Minister of Iran denies that the Holocaust happened in the Second World War, too, and he's clearly anti-Semitic. I mean, I agree with you about the rhetoric about Iran, and it just goes back to the whole thing about even when the first Gulf War, about weapons of mass destruction, and people keep talking about weapons of mass destruction. Meanwhile, the country that's so concerned about these things has 25,000 nuclear warheads. I mean, there's something, the disjoint between reality and the rhetoric is so completely glaring that it's Orwellian that people even don't stop to consider these things.
It's like they're saying Iran poses a threat to America while America sits on the doorstep of Iran with 2,000 nuclear weapons and threatening to bomb them. And while they're saying Iran poses a threat to America, like, it's so absolutely fanciful, you have to be an idiot to believe it.
Well, if you go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis too, 1962, which I've just been reading a little bit about, it's interesting because at the time I remember my mother pointing this out, was that, that there was this huge concern because the Russians were putting nuclear missiles in Cuba and they were 90 miles from the American coastline. But meanwhile, the United States had nuclear missiles in Turkey, which were just over the border from Russia, and that eventually is actually what happened in terms of putting an end to the crisis, is that Kennedy said to Khrushchev, look, you withdraw the missiles from Cuba, and 6 months later, we'll take them out of Turkey. We'll make it look like it's not a quid pro quo, but that's exactly what it was. And
what a hero to do that. And was that actually done then? Did they take them out of Turkey?
Yeah, but you know the whole thing is that if you read about. If you read about what happened during that period, I'm reading this very interesting book called Brothers, and I think the guy's name is David Talbot, which I highly recommend, and he's talking about, there's a Hollywood movie that actually is very good based on Robert Kennedy's book called 13 Days, which is about the 13 days of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and this is what sort of got me interested in this, was that the American military, especially Curtis LeMay, who is the head of the Air Force and had been in charge of bombing Japan during the Second World War and eventually ran as George Wallace's vice president candidate for the Independent Party in the 68 election. Curtis LeMay and actually all the other Joint Chiefs of Staff were furious with Kennedy because LeMay just said, well, look, let's just nuke them. And Kennedy said, well, what will the Russians do? And LeMay said nothing, and Kennedy said to, you know, to his brother and to his other advisors, LeMay is a complete and utter idiot, you know. Obviously, they're not going to do nothing if we nuke Cuba. And then, see, the other part of it was that they wanted at the very least to bomb them and then invade Cuba. And Kennedy said no, and that, I think, is eventually, that combined with the Bay of Pigs is why he was assassinated, and I think he was assassinated by elements of the American military and elements of the CIA. I mean, not both those organizations in total, but certain individuals, and I think that's basically what happened to him.
Isn't there a famous quote from Kennedy say he wanted to break up the CIA into a thousand bits?
Yeah, he wanted to splinter it into a thousand pieces after the Bay of Pigs because the Bay of Pigs, Kennedy refused to provide American military air cover, and he thought he was being blackmailed by the CIA. Like, they were trying to force his hand by staging this invasion, and they didn't believe that he would deny them air cover, but he did, and that they regarded him as a traitor, as did a lot of the Cuban exiles in the southern United States who wanted to overthrow Castro. So, he said he would want to splinter it into a thousand pieces, and he fired Alan Dulles and, trying to think of the other guy's name, he fired a couple of Richard Bissell, Dulles was the head and was the brother of John Foster Dulles, who'd been Secretary of State under Eisenhower and one of the major architects of the Cold War. And he fired these guys, and then he put John McCone in charge of the CIA. But McCone really was the nominal head of the CIA, but it was really Richard Helms who was his undersecretary. And, you know, the more you read about these guys, the more you realize that there was just this incredibly strong, really it amounted to insubordination on the part of the military in terms of their attitude towards Kennedy, you know, and they just didn't think he should be calling the shots, even though he was the president. And this is exactly what Eisenhower was warning about the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
Actually, Eisenhower, in the original speech, it was the military-industrial-congressional complex, but he took that out. But that's how everything gets, you know, gets funded, as Congress provides the funds and for all this military spending. And basically the way that military spending gets done is that if you put enough money in enough congressional districts, nobody will vote against anything. Even if something doesn't work, you know, they'll still pass it because it means money coming into their districts and jobs, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a whole kind of basing the economy on this military industrial nexus which drives the entire economy. By the way, I just wanted to correct you on something. Dennis Kucinich is not a member of the American Senate. He's a member of the House of Representatives and
is he
from Ohio, and he actually introduced articles of impeachment against Cheney earlier too, before Bush. And and it's interesting because if you say Kucinich, I mean, he's portrayed in the American mainstream media as sort of a joke, you know, because he's kind of odd-looking guy, and he's that's the way he's portrayed, and I'm thinking, but what he's saying is so much closer to to the truth about things and so much more germane to what's going on. I mean, you know, the people who have to answer aren't Dennis Kucinich. It's Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democratic Party. Is that they don't try to impeach these creeps, you know? Like, they shouldn't be impeached, you know? Clinton got impeached for having sex with a consenting adult.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter if it was white or yeah. I was like, give me a break, you know.
Yeah.
Bush started two wars, and you know, it's covered up 9/11 and presided over part of the impeachment articles are about Katrina too. Just allowed people to wallow in their own filth in New Orleans and didn't do anything to help them, you know? I mean...
And the violation of the Constitution and
well,
the torturing of
yeah,
people. And,
yeah.
And it's so ridiculous, like, how they have this huge anti-terrorist thing, but they never, hardly ever capture any terrorists, while really it's the terrorists running the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that's...
It's so funny.
That's the old joke about, you know, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. I mean, you know, when Moshe Dayan was Prime Minister of Israel, he was a hardliner against the Arab terrorists and against Al-Fatah and Yasser Arafat. But I mean, Moshe Dayan came to prominence by blowing up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. You know, he was a terrorist. He's a member of the terrorist group to establish Israel. So, you know, George Washington, by contemporary standards, and would be a terrorist.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's...
who owns the media. I mean,
there isn't any revolution. By the way, too, I read a fair amount about Myanmar... which is Burma before,
oh yeah,
long time ago, and that country is run by about the stupidest group of human beings on the planet. So
they're
a bunch of idiots. I mean, they're just even by anybody's standards. I remember reading this book on the Far East, and this guy had reported extensively from all these countries. Very rich country, but they're sort of run by these type of like Stalinist. Military guys who, you know, all they want to do is control people. You want to talk about the police state. That's all they want.
Yeah.
I mean, they are a complete bunch of morons.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm not trying to defend that.
Yeah.
I mean, something needs to be done.
Yeah.
But I guess my point was about the questions now about weather modification, because a lot of information is coming out about this.
Well, people have been talking about weather modification by both the Soviets when the Soviet Union still existed and the United States for 40 years. And
it's been around a while.
But, you know, it's funny when you talk about famine, because I kind of got a different perspective on things. I mean, I don't really kind of agree with your perspective that this is an intentional thing. I mean, I heard something interesting the other day. I thought was people talking about food and this guy came on and he was a representative of some sort of council that for basically agribusiness, you know, big business farming, and he sort of said, his argument was, well, look, you know, the only efficient means of farming now is to have huge farms, and that the production per acre goes up dramatically because you have the equipment and the resources to farm on a mega scale. And I'm listening to this guy and I'm thinking, well, that's a complete load of BS, you know, like that's just not true.
Yeah.
And then after this guy was on and he just said, you know, he started talking about, well, if you have smaller farms, he said, I've seen this in the third world where you have subsistence level farmers and it's a very difficult existence, blah, blah, blah. So I'm thinking, well, that's just not true, and really that's not really a accurate representation of what I understand about the problem with farming. So then this guy comes on and he's the president of Canadian Independent Farmers in Kingston, Ontario, and he says, well, it's a good thing I live in the country because I'm used to the smell of manure. He says that everything that guy said was just manure, basically, you know, his point was, well, that the statistics do not show that at all. And really, he said, if you really look at the problem with farming in North America now, is with agribusiness, is this huge farming, is that we're repeating what was done in the Soviet Union during the 20s and the 30s, which was, you know, when Stalin came in, they created these huge collectives to, well, actually Lenin, but it, I guess it came to to flourish under Stalin was that they ran the Russian farms like they were businesses. So like these huge farms, these collectives, and they got rid of the kulaks, which were the individual farmers. And as the guy pointed out, really what the result of that experiment was 40 years of disastrous agriculture for the Soviet Union, because the people who had knowledge of the land and who had worked the land and who were farmers were replaced by bureaucrats. And he said, if there's anything that history teaches us, is that, you know, farming, which is dependent on weather and cycles, doesn't really correspond to quarterly business reports. You know, it's much more complicated than that. And the practices that are involved in mega farming lead to less nutritious food, lead to depletion of the quality of the soil, and really are based on practices which have been proven over and over again to be, you know, really counterproductive in terms of increasing yields and increasing the quality of food. So he said, in the long run, what you're going to see is that this is going to be a disaster. It is a disaster in the making for food supplies. So, I mean, I would say, in a way, I think that we're headed for huge problems in terms of the food supply, but they're more based on economic greed and the concentration of power in the hands of a few people. That just like everything else, you know, it's this drive to control everything and to maximize profit from controlling everything, and when it applies to farming, is really quite disastrous for everybody concerned. In the long run, you know, like, we all got to eat, and we have to,
And I see on they're reporting on these floods in the American Midwest that this is going to have a significant impact on the food supply. And they also, they mentioned that in those areas there are a lot of independent farmers.
Oh, yeah.
So it may be a way in which they'll use the opportunity to carry forward the consolidation of the farming.
The pressures are so overwhelming for independent farmers anyways, in terms of just the economics of things, and you know, that's why so many small farms are swallowed up, is that there just isn't any, you know, it's hard to resist, it's hard to make a living doing this, and you need a lot of capital. That's the problem, you know, and you need banks to support you, and these guys just come in and kind of gobble it up, and then people get to the point where they've been generations of farmers, they just say, screw it, you know, and they move to the city and give up the family farm. I mean, that's been the pattern, I think, over the last...
Yeah, it has. I mean, for
50
for
years.
Yeah. I mean, we've had more and more people moving into the larger urban areas. And,
Hey, by the way, when they had the 30th anniversary tribute to Bob Dylan in Madison Square Garden, I think 1993 or 92, somewhere around there. I remember these two guys came out and did this version of Masters of War, and it was Eddie Vedder and Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Oh.
And I couldn't believe Eddie Vedder, like, he was unbelievable. That's an incredible performance of that song.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if that's the version go to my website. I think that my link is to a newer version.
I think they've actually recorded it, but I love the way he sings it, and I think I told you a couple of years ago, I saw Bob Dylan do it live, and I thought he should just put that recording out. I mean, it's as relevant as it was in 1963, if not more, and he just did this incredible version of it, and I was thinking, God, you know,
More relevant. I think now is when we can appreciate it more, because I think it's more widely seen who the masters of war are. I think there's this growing awakening to, you know, the masters of war, the military industrial complex, and the lyrics to his song, I mean, to me, they take on a whole new significance in light of what's happening currently in the world.
I wanted to was going to mention too that on that subject, I've mentioned before that there's a series of books by this guy, Chalmers Johnson, who's was a former CIA analyst and headed an institute which focused on Japan and Japanese studies. And the first of his books was called Blowback, and the second was called The Sorrows of Empire, Militarism, Secrecy, and I don't know what the last part is, and The End of the Republic. And then the third one, which is just out, is called Nemesis. And in The Sorrows of Empire, what he argues is that if you look historically, you can have a republic and you can have an imperial empire, but you can't have both. And he says that's basically the situation that the United States is in right now. I haven't read Nemesis yet, but I've read the first two books, and I highly recommend, especially Sorrows of Empire, that people read that, because he's an unrepentant, he was a cold warrior, he's a CIA analyst, and he's certainly not someone who's coming from the outside, but somebody who's coming from the inside, who's quite appalled by what's happened in terms of the American military, the American imperialism, and his analysis is very astute too, because it's like he makes all sorts of historical analogies and is very informed in his commentary. So, I'd highly recommend that people take a look at Chalmers Johnson.
Yeah. I had a couple of other news items I wanted to bring up, just as kind of reviewing some of the major things that stood out for me in the last week. The other was, I don't know if you heard of this, Jim, in Ireland, they had a referendum on joining the European Union yesterday, or two days ago.
Yeah.
And it was defeated.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is wonderful. And apparently I heard that if it was part of the regulations were that if all the countries didn't agree to it, it kind of undermined the whole project somehow. And it's apparently, I think, Ireland's really been one of the few countries that have been able to vote on it. And so hopefully this will be the beginning of a whole new resistance in Europe to the European Union, just as the resistance is rising through North America to the North American Union. You see it in Canada, resistance now. They have this stop, the SPP, and we have a new political party in Canada, the Canadian Action Party. This is one of their, they want the public to be informed about the North American Union. It's amazing how these people bring it in with no consultation with no discussion in the House of Commons, no discussion in the media about it. It's all brought in undercover, and the media ignores it. I see the complicity of the media in allowing these schemes to be carried forward. The other thing was, within the last 2 weeks, I don't know if you heard about this, we had the latest Bilderberg meeting in Chantilly, Virginia. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Where did you hear of that? I'm interested.
I just saw it on the internet somewhere. I can't remember exactly where.
In the internet, yeah, not the corporate media.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, here they have this meeting. They're attended by the queens of Holland and Spain and Henry Kissinger and the Rockefellers and Rothschild representatives and all these corporate elites. And they all gather, and all the media ignore it.
Yeah,
it's astonishing. It just shows that the media, there has to be a media. I heard the phrase that the revolution won't be on TV.
No,
it's like more and more. I just turn my TV off.
The
it's
revolution
not worth it.
It's in Gil Scott Heron. The revolution will not be televised.
Who said that?
Gil Scott Heron. Do you know that song? It's
no.
It's from the early 70s, Gil Scott Heron, kind of a jazz piece. It's really good. It's called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You should check that out, actually. It's a really good piece. It's kind of, he kind of talks his commentary. It's really interesting, actually. But that's kind of the chorus, is The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
And the other item, in Canada, again, they're bringing back Bill C-51, where they're trying to ban people from having access to health supplements and vitamins and minerals.
Yeah.
Isn't that unbelievable?
No.
I mean, it's not. Given the criminality of the government. But
these guys are, yeah, I signed a petition against that, actually. But
did you?
My local health food store has a petition against, I mean... Well, these guys, you know, they just, they're unrelenting in their desire to kind of control everything and license everything. Hey, by the way, I just thought, you know, I meant to mention this before to you, except I didn't want to set you off, but there was a very good article by Naomi Klein in Rolling Stone magazine. It's not in the current issue. I think it was the issue before. She reported on Shenzhen, which is a city in China, which is close to Hong Kong, and which 30 years ago did not exist. It was basically a mud flat, and now it's this huge city of 12 million people.
Wow.
And it's an industrial city. The chances are, she said, you know, they make all sorts of computer supplies. If you have a monitor, it's almost guaranteed that it was made in this city. And what she was talking about in the article, it's a really good article. It's very well written. You know Naomi Klein?
Canadian actor? With her Steps to Fascism.
The Shock Doctrine. Anyway, what she was reporting on was that she said, really, China is kind of this model of the new kind of combination of communism and capitalism in which the state controls everything, and yet, you know, is based on a capitalist economic model, so that the money flows in, you know, and they are engaged in capitalism, but it's a state-controlled capitalism. In this city, they have 2 million, the city of 12 million people, 2 million cameras to monitor people's movements. In London, which, of course, has had cameras, you know, for the last 35 years in response mainly to the IRA, 500,000 cameras in London, which is a city of what, approximately the same size, 12, 15 million people.
Wow.
2 million cameras in this place. A lot of them are disguised, too, eh? And then she had this whole thing about this company there that has created this facial recognition software.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supplied to them, the startup was supplied by this American company. They got a license to use something from that started them on this process, which is actually technically illegal because since Tiananmen Square, American companies aren't allowed to provide anything to China which involves any kind of security. Like an American company can't sell handcuffs to China.
Oh.
Yeah, because of Tiananmen Square. There's a congressional prohibition against any kind of security device or anything that would... So technically this is illegal. Of course, the company hasn't been charged because it's run by, I think it's one of the former CIA guys is prominent in terms of the board of directors. I can't think of who it was. Anyway, so this guy has developed a software where they can recognize people's faces in 1 second. You know, he can scan like millions and so. So she said that the real interest in this in China, too, is that because in China, they have 130 million migrant workers in China, 130 million people who move around from place to place as the work, you know, arises. But they don't, because they're not resident in any place, they don't have any political rights, they don't have any, you know, they don't have any stature, basically. All they can do is they work, and they're essentially exploited as cheap labor. So it's like 130 million Okies, like, you know, from the American Depression, they like moving to California to pick fruit. Only they got 130 million. The Chinese government reported that in the last year, there were 87,000 incidents, that's what they call them, incidents of political demonstrations, you know, in China. 87,000. That's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. So then she goes on and she talks about what happened in Tibet, and she said the Chinese authorities were there filming everything that was going on in the streets, and then they edited it and showed it in back on television in China, and to make it look like the Tibetans were the ones who were aggressing against the Chinese troops, and the Chinese troops were simply defending themselves. So I was like, you know, it's really kind of chilling, this whole article, because it's like a model for, media manipulation, constant surveillance of people, information control of people. It's just, it was, It was very creepy, and it was talking about an Orwellian state, you know.
It's so unbelievable in a way, because it's like they've got all this security to catch potential terrorists. Meanwhile, these like obvious terrorists just they have complete carte blanche. They can do whatever they want. They're completely unsubject to any kind of law.
Yeah.
You know, like rampant criminality. Just rampant.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so amazing. Like, and people accept it. Well, I don't know people accept it. I mean, I think people more and more are afraid of what's coming. I mean, you know, a lot of people fear now that, you know, there are these 600 Halliburton concentration camps all through the States, and they're empty. You know, and a lot of people, I mean, I can see people from the Truth Movement being occupants of these camps, you know, if they institute martial law at some point, which I think is likely to happen myself, because I think the world's elites are going to have to stage a major terrorist activity in the States in order to carry their agenda forward. I think they're being disclosed too much, and it's really beginning to pose threats to them. Hopefully not, you know. Hopefully we'll get to the election anyway. I mean, I've been surprised that they've held off bombing Iran, and I think that's the resistance within the States and Europe and elsewhere to that.
A lot of people have talked about that. Oh, the one other thing that I heard too, which is sort of interesting, was I heard this British barrister on the CBC radio the other morning, and I caught it mid-program, so I didn't kind of get the whole background, but I understand, I think he's written a book about the suspension of civil liberties in the United States and the whole torture debate since 9/11. And the comment that really struck me was that he had been involved. You know, when Allende, the president of Chile, he was in Britain, and they wanted to extradite him back to Chile to stand trial for the abuses under his regime, eh?
Oh, yeah.
And he was involved in that case, and he was saying that what had happened was that the Chilean government would, like, you know how Allende came to power, eh? Like, he was a military guy, not Allende, I'm sorry, Pinochet. Pinochet, pardon me. Allende was the president and was a freely elected Marxist president of Chile, and he was overthrown by the CIA and American business interests and the Chilean military. So Pinochet.
Yeah, so that was another of these, spreading democracy.
Yeah, they were spreading democracy. Pinochet came to power, and, you know, they tortured and they murdered thousands of people. And
tens of thousands.
And then, eventually Pinochet was after the regime was replaced and some form of democracy came into being, and Pinochet was called. He was in England, and they ended up extraditing him back to Chile. And what this guy was saying was that, you know, he was a very old man at that point, too, which is always these guys, oh, I'm an old man, you know, leave me alone. It's like, hey, you know, you got to be an old man. But anyway, so they extradited him, and he said what one of the things that was really striking to him was that Pinochet and the people around him had passed these laws which essentially justified their abuses, and they felt that would protect them if they were ever called to account. Eh?
Yeah.
And he said, really, you've got an analogous situation in the United States where he said these guys in the American government, people like Rumsfeld, Cheney, Bush, Condoleezza Rice, George Tenet, you know, all these people are going to have to be really careful when they travel abroad, because they can be arrested and brought before, be charged as war criminals and brought before the International Criminal Court, you know, just as what happened with Milosevic in Serbia, you know.
Serbia,
like, so, I mean, that's a kind of an, and he said, you know, it's essentially an analogous situation. You know, really, when you get right down to it, most of the legislation that was passed is the president can do whatever he wants because he's fighting a war on terror. Well, you know, that's really doesn't stand the smell test, and legally, you know, it's just, again, it's another aspect of the Orwellian nature of this whole thing, is that, you know, I know what we'll do. We'll just put people in Guantanamo Bay, you know, without any rights, and they won't be prisoners of war, and they won't be that they won't be common criminals. That they'll have this status where they're really non-persons, you know, which is really so outrageous. It's just, you know.
Yeah, the whole thing is sickening.
Yeah,
especially the whole time when it's a completely confabulated war on terror. Not completely. I mean, there are terrorists.
Yeah.
Like Muslim terrorists now. But I mean, for the most part, the most obvious terrorists have nothing to do with these Muslim men in imprisoned.
Yeah.
I mean, the obvious terrorists are, you know, they get to spoil the White House.
Well, under the Patriot Act, how many people have been charged and convicted of criminal terrorist offense? Zero.
Yeah.
I was like, come on. And as somebody put, you know, I think that's in Michael Moore's film, it's like, how do they draft this act, which is like 1,000 pages long, and have it ready to go? I mean, you know, it's like that in and of itself is
And then the Senate passes it without reading it.
Yeah.
They don't even know. I mean, it is a dictatorship now. I mean, yeah.
Well, I would say it's a small F fascist country in the sense that fascism is just really a political movement involving the political arm of an alliance of the military and industry, and that's basically what you have in the United States as a fascist country, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, not to equate it yet with Germany or Italy, but it's getting there. I mean, it's certainly the seeds are there, and I would say that I'd say the abuse of the court system since 2001 is definitely leading to totalitarianism and to an authoritarian regime, you know. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous what they can do to people in terms of, like, you know, fundamental freedoms, and some of these legal opinions that people render are just they're right out of the Nazis' playbook, you know.
It's horrifying. I mean, who's this fellow from Guantanamo who's been tortured for 5 years and now is confessing to 9/11? Like, what a joke.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, you torture someone. I mean, I can't imagine the horror of what these people go through.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. Imagine being tortured like that and all the psychological methods they have.
Yeah.
You know, they strip people. They don't let them get any sleep. They starve them, they make them cold, they isolate them, they put hoods on them. Imagine being treated like that, like terrorized.
Waterboarding.
You want to find terrorists. Look at the U.S. military. They terrorize, they are terrorizing those people in their custody. They terrorize them. That's what they're doing. Torture is terrorism. And it's being intentionally carried out by the government. You know, and now this guy, they're talking about giving him the death penalty. I mean, just imagine that. And you know the guy didn't have anything to do, I mean, with 9/11. I mean, it's a complete fraud. But you put anyone in Guantanamo Bay, how can you know? I mean, he'd probably gladly be executed.
Yeah, well,
you know, how many of them are trying to commit suicide?
That's the whole point, is to break
escape their hell that they're put in.
Hey, I want to...
I can't. These people, these elites, have no idea what they're facing in afterlife. You know, and many people don't. I really believe that. I believe in karma, and I believe that the physics of the universe is such that these things do come back on you. And these people are going to face hell. You know,
I hope so.
Whether or not they do through their lives in the afterlife, you know. CNN isn't going to be there to cover it. You know.
Really?
Yeah. No, they're not. And these people are going to be drawn into realms that they don't want to be in.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be tortured souls, and they're going to face the consequences of what they've done. If not in this life, they will in the next life.
Yeah, that's a comforting thought. I wanted to ask...
Yeah, it is comforting, and you know, I believe it, and to me it makes sense in terms of understanding the physics and creation science. It makes sense, but it is a comforting thought.
Whenever I read the commentaries of people who have had higher experiences of consciousness, and especially the masters and the yogis and the saints who have experience these higher realms and come back with some sort of an understanding of it as to what's happened to them. And one of the things that always strikes me about what they say is that on some level, everything is accounted for and makes sense, which always makes me think, you know, which makes me think that, well, you know, no matter what people do in this life on this realm, that nothing goes unpunished and nothing goes unrewarded, that you know, you are judged according to your conduct. And as you say, I mean, I don't know this, but I suspect that this is true, that people do go to these lower realms who have been evil. I mean, it's the only thing that makes sense to me in terms of reading these accounts from these people. But
I mean, for me, like, I completely accept the idea of us as living in a multidimensional existence. And I think there's overwhelming evidence for existence apart from the body and afterlife and so on. So, you know, if those things are indeed true, as I would argue they are, well, then it makes sense that these people are drawn into realms corresponding to their own psychological makeup.
Yeah. I wanted to just sort of switch gears a bit and ask you something that I've been thinking about, which is, you know, you talk about consciousness as arising in the heart, and that the analogy is the head brain is like the moon, and the heart is like the sun, in which the heart really, the head brain doesn't produce consciousness, but reflects the light of the heart, or the consciousness of the heart. And, you know, it's a radically different idea about the nature of consciousness. And almost everybody, subscribes to the head doctrine and says that, you know, consciousness is somehow produced by the head, and that, you know, if you want to write a book on consciousness, you put a brain on the front cover, and if you want to write a really good book, you put two brains on the front cover, and you know, maybe even three. But, you know, for the last year or so, I've been working in the personal injury field in law, and I've been writing reports about people who, most of whom have been in car accidents, and a lot of whom have suffered closed head injuries. And so what you see consistently over and over again is somebody bangs their head, and you know, as I say, it's a closed head injury, so there's not even any visible trauma, like they're not bleeding or anything, and then they go to the hospital and they have a CT scan and it looks normal, and then they start to have problems and they have an MRI and it looks normal, but everybody around them knows that they're not the same person that they were before they banged the head. And so their personality changes. I mean, people start to have all sorts of cognitive difficulties in terms of their memory, in terms of their ability to organize and perceive things correctly. And then a lot of people, their emotional processes change to also, they become, their affect becomes flat, or they become withdrawn and isolated, and they are unmotivated and lethargic, and then on top of that, often they just don't seem like themselves. That's it. You know, people say their personalities have changed significantly. So, I mean, I would say, like, you know, I was thinking about this, because this is, like, all evidence to suggest the validity of the head doctrine in a way. I mean, because you hit your head and you have these profound changes in people. They didn't hit their hearts, they hit their heads. But, you know, I mean, I see kind of, like, it's sort of, in a sense, it's a reminder of yes, it's, you know, we've never really sort of said in these programs, we're not denying that the brain is critical in determining an aspect, a very important aspect of consciousness, but that it's one of several brains, and that they all interact in people to produce our normal sense of eye and our personality and everything. But it's like, you know, if you damage your television set, and suddenly you start, you know, getting overlapping channels, and you know, what's on channel 6, it somehow shows up on channel 7 and has the wrong sound, you know. I mean, that doesn't really mean that broadcast is in the television set, it means that there's something that's interfered in terms of the receptive apparatus. You know, now if there's some sort of a severance of the connection in the broadcast apparatus, like if the cable goes down, some sort of disconnect between the broadcast and between the receiver, then you have something very different. So, like, I mean, in terms of that analogy, if you have a heart attack, you know, before you have a heart attack, like if you cut off blood flow to some part of the body, you lose consciousness of that part of the body. If you have a heart attack, you lose consciousness. And so, this information isn't inconsistent with what you're saying about the heart doctrine. It's just sort of another aspect of it. It's like, you know, the personal sense of I is obviously in some significant ways is determined by your head brain. But the mistake I would say is in believing that it's exclusively rooted in the head brain or produced by the head brain.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree that our personality, egoic nature, is more centered in the mind.
Right.
And most people's normal consciousness is structured around their personality, which may be more or less congruent with their essence. I remember, like, first studying Gurdjieff, and that was the most valuable distinction he makes between what he calls essence and personality. And I remember at the time, like, no one else I knew in psychology made this distinction. And he says, essence is what you are in your being, okay? Whereas personality, in a way, is how you're conditioned by external influences and life experiences. So in a way, personality is acquired from outside of you. So in a way, personality is what you are not, whereas your essence is what you are in your being. So the personality is like consciousness, you know, structured into the structures of the mind in the head, and that becomes our kind of personalized consciousness. But what we want to do is resolve back being conscious in our essence. And brings to mind that I'm reading a very interesting book that's kind of very popular. It hit Oprah's book club. It was number one, and Oprah's done some videos with this fellow, Eckhart Tolle. Have you heard of him, Jim?
No.
And the book is called A New Earth. And it's all about ego and how ego is something different from consciousness.
Huh.
And next week in the show, I'm going to kind of do a review of this book because it's got some very useful and insightful sections to it. I'm quite taken by it. It's very nicely written, too. It's quite easy to read. So I'll do a review of that next week.
Oh, yeah.
Also next week, I had my material here today to go into zero-point studies.
Right.
And I've said this for the last three shows that I would do it next week. But I really do want to come back to this because I've revised my Heart Doctrine book and I've redone the early materials on zero-point origins and really. So next show, I want to come back to that and try to get away from the politics, maybe do a brief review of the last 2 weeks. But I want to come back to that and pick up on the zero-point concept again.
Yeah.
I didn't want to carry it forward today when, you know, you didn't feel up to being on initially in the show because I'd like your support through that. So we'll come back to that next time.
Yeah, I apologize for, I've been sick for the last week and I really have been depleted of energy and I wasn't able to talk for a couple of days, which is probably a huge relief to some people who know me, but...
Yeah,
it was kind of distressing, but
So anyway, that distinction between essence and personality, and it's so interesting in Gurdjieff's teaching, he says the center of personality is your formatory apparatus, which
right.
is the mechanical part of the intellectual center in the head, whereas the center of your essence is your higher emotional center connected to the heart.
Right.
So the personality essence distinction is related to this heart doctrine versus the head doctrine.
Yeah, and he also says that that in a young child, the essence develops and personality develops in that up until about age six, but then essence generally stops growing because the child is exposed to all these external influences and which reinforce and develop personality, and little by little, personality grows over essence like a crust. And he said, so people, it's quite common for, you know, people, even sophisticated people, people of culture, to have the essence of a six-year-old child because their essence has stopped developing. And
it's funny, that's kind of what you see in these political figures.
Well, yeah, I mean, George Bush to me is like a six-year-old child. I think he has the essence of a six-year-old child, you know. I mean, that's what he strikes me as. He strikes me as a little boy who, you know, if he doesn't get his way, he's a petulant little, you know, prick, and he's, you know, that's about how he's developed. And it's like, you know, that's a lot of people who are supposed to be accomplished in life. When you scratch them a little bit, you prick them in a little bit, that's how they react. They act like they're little children, you know, one of the other distinctions I like was what Arash, the student of Gurdjieff, said, that that personality is determined by what will people think. It's truth in social context in terms of what others will say in judging you, and then essence is truth before God. It's like it's what you are.
In your being.
Yeah.
Another way I like how he explains we have different centers, and the structures of the centers, like your thinking center, emotional center, other centers, you have your basic centers, and that's in the structure of what you are as a being. But then what the content is that's imposed on those centers is acquired from without. Like if you grow up in America, you believe all what Americans are led to believe. You know, whereas if you grow up in China, you're conditioned a different way.
Yeah.
But people, as they grow up, then they take all what's been conditioned into them as being part of their essential self, and don't realize that's only part of how they've been conditioned.
Yeah, and that's why he says that you know, the development of a human being is the development of consciousness and conscience, and he says that that, you know, morality is imposed from externally, and so what's moral in one country or in one social class or in one age is immoral in another country. And he says there's no universal morality, but that conscience, which is a higher force, is everywhere the same. But then in order to experience conscience, you have to develop your higher emotional center to so that you can live by your conscience. And that's what he says. People claim that they live morally, but really that's just in terms of their conditioning and their upbringing and their expectations that have been imposed upon them by wherever they happen to have grown up and wherever they happen to have lived and wherever they happen to have been influenced by their class and, you know, whatever. And as he said, the reality, that's again kind of, it's the difference between all the divisions between different types of external types of religions, is that in essence the conscience which underlies real religion, which is at the heart of religion, is everywhere the same.
Yeah.
Because it's a higher influence, it's a higher force. It's not something that comes from this level of life. It's something that's higher, which descends into people and which people can realize by awakening their heart and developing their higher emotional center.
And it's interesting how Gurdjieff sees the awakening of conscience as the only, like, the primary route to the saving of humankind, or the awakening of the higher emotional center. Like Gurdjieff explained, he compares the awakening of conscience to the fire that burns away the impurities in someone.
Mm-hmm.
So the awakening of conscience is critical to human evolution. And conscience, to acquire conscience, it's like most people hide from all the lies and inconsistencies in themselves, and we always defend ourselves. But in the mystical path, in the way we want to see ourselves objectively and strip away this false personality, to see ourselves in truth, what we are. So the awakening of conscience is so important. And you can see how the complete lack of conscience in these people that we've been talking about, the elites. Like, it's like most normal people in my life, I've never met someone who I would consider would murder people, millions, and not think about it. Like, most people have a heart.
Yeah.
You know, most Americans I've ever met, you know, they're like one of the most generous people. Eh? I mean, Americans have been so deceived because their generosity is played upon. Yeah. But anyway, what was I trying to get at? Maybe I'm slipping a little bit.
The lack of conscience and
yeah, the lack of conscience in the psychopathic elites. I mean, you just think of the lie upon lie upon lie.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes, do these people ever really believe what they're saying?
Yeah, well, that's a strange.
I don't think they do, but in a way, I think they acted so much, in a way they come to believe it. I believe there's deep psychic splitting in them.
Yeah, well, I would say that a lot of people do believe these things, they don't think that they're misrepresenting anything. It's like the whole thing is like, that's what strikes me, is that when I watch the news or read the newspaper, it's almost all cast in what I would say in terms of morality, whereas there's no real insight of conscience in any of the commentary or any of the analysis of things. It's very shallow, and it's based on simplistic and formatory conceptualizations of the way things are, and blatant misrepresentation and blatant self-interest. But that when you read it and step back and try to understand it as maybe someone who doesn't have any investment in any of it, you realize, boy, people are a long way from having any conscience, you know.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Very
I noticed we're
almost out. Yeah,
coming on 6 o'clock.
Yep.
Or at 6 o'clock Eastern time. In 2 weeks' time, we'll get back and deal with the zero point concept and leave the politics aside a little bit. I'd like to thank BBS Radio. I encourage people out there to, let's all keep up the efforts. We're in a critical time in human history. We don't know what way things may turn here. I think sometimes how they say Atlanteans destroyed themselves when they developed this advanced technology but didn't develop morally. And I hope we don't repeat the same pattern. I think it's time that we wake up and turn this around before we're led into Armageddon and led into this Satanist fascist state that's being imposed upon us. And we all need to be making an effort. Well, we don't need to be. For people who want to learn to live in truth and who believe in justice and love and higher ideals, we're in a war. There's a spiritual warfare going on for the life of humankind. And we're in that battle. So thank you, BBS Radio. God bless you, people of America, who are resisting and rising up and awakening, and people around the world who are doing this. Okay, thanks, Jim. Thanks, BBS Radio. Back in 2 weeks. This is Christopher Holmes, Zero Point Radio. My website, www.zeropoint.ca. And I would encourage people, listen to the interview with Kucinich with Alex Jones. It's a remarkable, remarkable, wonderful. I saw a whole side of Kucinich I'd never realized before. Very wonderful interview. Okay, thank you all. Goodbye.
Bye.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.